and he went along his way as governor, but after the state voted to go out of the union, Houston's days were numbered. He was removed from office. Houston continued to insist that Texans owed no allegiance to the Confederacy or to any Confederacy that would be formed, I should say, but he was a voice in the wilderness, so to speak, or at least he was in a distinct minority in Texas as the secession movement rolled on there. He was removed from office, as I said. He retired to his home, a very unhappy and embittered man because of the road that Texas had taken in this crisis after Lincoln's election. The secession convention in Texas simply declared the governor's office vacant and named the lieutenant governor to replace Houston. So here by February 1st, very quickly, by February 1st, there are seven states out of the Union. The entire tier of Deep South states had decided very quickly that it could, that they, each of them, could not remain in the Union, and they were gone. They all then sent delegates to a convention to meet in Montgomery, Alabama, which will be our second topic in this lecture. They gathered in Montgomery, Alabama to draft founding documents for a new slaveholding republic. Delegates from those seven seceding states, they met in early February 1861. Their tasks, draft a constitution and put in place a provisional government that would control the country until regular elections could be held. Montgomery would be the seat of the government for this incipient Confederate States of America. Now, the delegates used the United States Constitution as their model. In fact, you can picture them holding the U.S. Constitution in one hand and having a blank piece of paper in the other hand, and then simply transferring most of what is in the U.S. Constitution into their new document. That's one reason they could work so quickly. Unlike the delegates to the Philadelphia Convention back in that steamy summer of 1787, these men in Montgomery had a clear blueprint from which to work, and that's what they did, and they worked very expeditiously. They made only a few changes in the United States Constitution, changes that reflected the state rights, pro-slavery concerns that had caused them to secede in the first place. The final Confederate Constitution was completed in March, after acceptance in February, and here is the new founding document. Here are a couple of the changes between the Confederate Constitution and the United States Constitution. It will not come as a surprise that one thing the Confederate Constitution did was explicitly protect the institution of slavery. The word slavery or slave does not appear in the United States Constitution, of course, although there are euphemisms used. The Confederate Constitution explicitly guaranteed slavery in the states and in all the territories. It also forbade passage of protective as opposed to revenue tariffs and outlawed congressional appropriations for internal improvements. That's the antithesis of the Republican program, of course, as put forward in the Republican 1860 platform. There won't be government money for internal improvements. There won't be protective tariffs. The Confederate Constitution also omitted the General Welfare Clause from the United States Constitution and stated that in ratifying the document, each state acted, quote, in its sovereign and independent character. Now, other changes included limiting the president to a single six-year term and giving the president a line item veto. Those are things that have been debated as possible amendments to our Constitution over the years. Interestingly, the Confederate Constitution also said that states that entered into this compact couldn't leave, which is very unusual. They've just left the United States, but now they're saying that once you're in our, or once you're on our team, you're not going to leave our team. The extreme fire eaters, men such as William L. Yancey, who was not even a delegate to the convention, had very little to say in the deliberations in Montgomery. They are not a major presence in Montgomery. Now, this is often the case. The more radical individuals who precipitate a crisis and who provide the leadership in the revolutionary phase of a movement or the violent phase of a movement often are not the ones who sit down around a table to undertake the hard work of writing constitutions or putting in place governments that will work.